taking seriously our opening prayer this morning to let the Spirit knock us off our moorings, I'm going to change things up a little bit this morning, and I'm going to preach from down here. This morning, or this week, as I decided in which passage I was going to preach on, I was kind of drawn to the passage in Acts about Saul and Saul's story of conversion, and quite taken with that. So I decided that I would speak on that this morning rather than what is a very interesting gospel passage, and we will certainly get back to that at another time. But the story of Saul, well, it goes kind of like this. Saul, we meet for the first time in the book of Acts in chapter 7. It is kind of a, well, it's kind of a charged story as Saul, he is persecuting Christians, and he is involved in the murder of Stephen. Stephen, St. Stephen, was the first Christian martyr. And what happened was is that Stephen preached kind of an incendiary sermon against the leaders of Sanhedrin, the Jewish leaders in Jerusalem. And after preaching that sermon, he was moved outside, and they stoned him to death. And we're told very specifically that Paul was there and participating in enabling that murder to happen. That's where we first encounter Saul. Saul, who we come to know later as Paul, the writer of all those letters in the New Testament and the missionary to the Gentiles, but here he's still Saul. We're going to put a little parenthetical note here, which is important to do from time to time when talking about tensions between Jews and Christians. Certainly, for a very long time, various scripture passages have been used to kind of justify violence against Jews. And in this section, we have the Jewish leadership killing one of the early Christians. And certainly, we could use that to say Jews bad, Christians good. So it's good to pause for a second in the storytelling to highlight the fact that at this point in history, there was no real Christian church. This was just a Jesus movement, people who were followers of Jesus. And Stephen was a Jew. So this is not Jewish violence on Christian violence. This is Jewish violence on other Jews. This is a family fight. And so we need to be careful when we come across these to highlight that and make sure that we don't use that to justify this as fuel for further violence against Jews in a world that's had more than its fair share of that. So that in mind, we think about Saul and his story and his complicity in the murder of Stephen. The next time we see him, Saul is on the road to Damascus, and he has gotten authority to go around and to persecute followers of Jesus and to imprison them. So he's walking on the road to Damascus to try to find some, and suddenly, out of nowhere, a blinding flash of light surrounds him. And Paul finds himself in this conversation with Jesus, the very one that he was setting about to persecute the followers of. And Jesus says to him, "Saul, why do you persecute me?" It was after this encounter that Saul finds himself in Damascus, fasting, not eating or drinking for 3 days, and he's totally blind. Now, Saul wasn't a Jesus proclaimer yet. He had been a murder breeder, we're told, but he's not a Jesus proclaimer yet. The conversion is not complete. I think it's safe to say, though, that Jesus has gotten his attention. And it was in that time when Jesus comes in a vision to Ananias. And Ananias is a follower of Jesus. And he says, "Go to Damascus and lay your hands on Saul and cure his blindness." And so Ananias, being a good disciple, says, "Absolutely not. Are you kidding me? This guy's a murder breeder, and he's sent to imprison people just like me. There is no way that I'm going there to cure him. Thank you, but no way. Find somebody else to do it." Well, Jesus wasn't taking no for an answer that day, and he says, "Go. I know he's a murder breeder. I know he's a bad egg, but he's also my instrument, you see. And he's part of my plan, and you will go. Now stop your whining and get up and go." So Ananias, stuck between a murder breather and a very persuasive Jesus, decides to go. And he finds
in Damascus. And he lays his hand on him, and we're told that something like scales fell from his eyes, and Saul could see. And then he was baptized, we're told. It wasn't too long after that that he decided to eat a little something, and he regained his strength. And then for 3 days, he sat around talking with the disciples. I would love to know what those conversations were like with those disciples that he had been killing and putting in jail, but now he is eating dinner. So, 3 days of that. And then Saul gets himself up, and he goes to the synagogues, not just one, but synagogues, plural, and he proclaims to them that Jesus is the Son of God. And now, murder breather to Jesus proclaimer, transformation complete. God, or Saul, is now an instrument and part of Jesus' work in the world and God's plan of salvation. It's a great story. I mean, it's a really great story. I absolutely love this story. It is a story that we can all identify with, I think. We've all had some transformation of one kind or another. It's archetypal, and there's just so much meat and richness. It's hard not to love the story of a bad egg turning good, of someone who was lost and is now found, someone who was blind but now can see. It's a great story, and I'm thankful for it. How is it? Well, so many of these stories in the Bible, we have to take some care with it. We have to be cautious with it. And the reason I think that we have to be cautious with it is because when we encounter this story, maybe it's the way that it's told to us in Acts, or maybe it's just the way that we're used to hearing it, but when we encounter this story, we tend to think that it's all about Saul. You know, it's Saul's conversion. It's Saul's story of rejection. Saul was on the road to Damascus. Saul. Right? It's Saul's story. But when you look at it, what does Saul really do? I mean, was Saul out there on the road to Damascus trying to find Jesus and have this encounter? No. Jesus comes to Saul. Was Saul, did he make himself blind and then make himself see again? Of course not. Jesus was involved in that, turning him blind and then sending Ananias to turn him, give him sight again. Did Paul ask to be baptized? Not the way it's told. It says he was baptized. It doesn't say Paul begged to be baptized. I'm not sure about that one, but it doesn't show Paul as a kind of a main actor in that motion. So the story really isn't about Paul's action. It's really about God's action. And yet, when we encounter it, for some reason we think about it as Saul's story. Now, thinking about it this week, I thought, you know, that's a really important point. Because if we understand this story about Saul's conversion as being about Saul, then when we think about our own stories, our own faith journeys, our own moments of conversion and transformation, maybe we also think about those stories as being primarily about us. And when Paul's story is about Paul, Saul's story is about Saul, and our story is about us, then where's God in all that? God kind of gets pushed to the side. When God really is a main actor in both Saul's story and, I would argue, in our faith stories as well. Well, for us kind of rugged, individualistic New Englanders, for those who kind of value the story of those who kind of pick themselves up by their bootstraps and it's all about us, it might be hard for us to take. It might be hard for it to sink in that our stories are really as much or more about God as they are about us. And so, my message this morning really is a simple one. And that is that when we think about our stories, we have to see God's story too. We have to awaken and become aware that our stories are places where God's story happens. Time, history, the moments and days of our lives, those are the places where God is at work in the world. And when we look at our stories and the things that happen to us, everything from as dramatic as Damascus Road experiences to something as much mundane as what happened to me at work or at school today, that those are the places, if we look carefully and we're awake and open to it, those are the places where we find the story of God. And so when we focus on our stories as our stories, we lose the gospel story. And as interesting and wonderful and great as we all are, and as interesting a story as we have to tell, our stories can't save. You know, our stories can't give the hope and love that the gospel story can. So when we tell our faith stories about us, we lose the power of the gospel. And for my money, this world is desperately in need of the gospel story. So when we look at our stories, how can we mine them for God's story? How do we awaken to that? Where do we find the point of connection between what happened to us and the places where God is acting and at work in our lives? Something for us to carry with us this week and today and for our whole lives, really. To become aware and awakened to those places where God is working in and through us. And to name those places and to say, well, it wasn't just something I ate. It wasn't just coincidence. It wasn't just something that happened to you, but maybe, just maybe, God was working in that moment. Maybe God had a role to play in that connection I just made, in that person that I just met, in that phone call that I just got. And to live with that, and to make that a question that you ask often, where is God here? Could that have been God? And then once you determine, you know what, I'm pretty sure that was God, maybe when you tell that story to other people, that you not be afraid to say that. So this happened to me, but you know, God was involved there too. And that way you help other people see God's story in their story. It takes practice, I think. It takes awareness. It takes an intentional effort to name God's action in our lives. Easy to write it away. And so my prayer and my hope for all of us is that we become suspicious Christians. That we become suspicious that God is really at work. We become suspicious that Jesus really was dead but is now alive again. That we become suspicious and we do our investigative work. And that when we've done that, that we begin to tell our stories as God's story.